to be Cobb.
Oh, yeah, and welcome to the Super 70 Sports Show. I am Ricky Cobb, joined as always by the illustrious Ronnie T-Shirts. And Ronnie, it's been a little while since we've done this, but we're back at it today. What the hell is going on?
I don't know. Same old for me. Just living my best life, trying to figure out when I'm going to travel again. But I think the question on everybody's mind is, why haven't we done a podcast for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks? And the answer is you're just big timing everybody because you're a freaking star now. You have this super duper retro metro watch video show on Vice. What's it called again?
It's inspiring that my partner has put the show to memory so quickly, but it is called the Super Maximum Retro Show. It's on Vice TV Tuesday nights at 10 Eastern time. And it's basically just the best fucking television show. It's the best thing since Seinfeld.
I actually do enjoy it.
Well, thank you. I've been on 2 of the 4 episodes that have aired thus far, and people have had some pretty nice things to say about the show and nice things to say about me. So I appreciate the feedback that we've gotten, and we want everybody to watch this motherfucker so that we can keep making them.
But I guess what I want to hear about, and what I think other people are kind of more interested in, is maybe a little bit of the behind the scenes. And also, like, what's it like as I think you think of yourself as you're just a regular dude, right? Who just happens to have kind of, you know, caught lightning in a bottle with the Super 70s thing. But like, you went to a premiere in New York City, Manhattan. Like, what the hell was that like?
Yeah, man, it was crazy. It was a premiere party for a television show, and my television show, now I say that, it's not just my television show, but it does go back to Super 70s being the genesis of it. And so you're there in this environment that's pretty foreign for a community college professor guy who, like you said, I mean, I absolutely just see myself as a regular guy, dude. I feel like I'm playing dress up every day just to try to convince the world that I'm an adult, for starters, because I'm 100% a 12-year-old kid wearing a 51-year-old man Halloween suit around every day. So it amazes me that I'm a quote unquote adulting, for starters. And then on top of that, now I've ingratiated the world of television shows and things. So yeah, man, none of this is lost on me. It is an absolute mind-blowing midlife thing. And the whole Super 70s trip has been an adventure that, honest to God, man, one day, I had a friend the other day tell me that one day I needed to write a book about this. And I think one day I'm going to have to write a book about it, because what has happened to me over the course of the last 5-6 years is just stupid.
So, but what was like the premiere? I'm just so fascinated by this, because it's just something that regular people will never, ever get to do. Like I can go to a taping of a TV show, right? Like, you can be in the audience or something like that. But to actually be at this premiere where there's executives and stars and all that stuff, like, what, like, was it surreal? Like, did you pinch yourself? How did you feel?
Well, I pinched myself before the show. And I think that we need to talk about that for a second. I was telling you moments before we started to record this podcast, and I'm going to go a little inside baseball here for a second, and we'll get back to the premiere. But I'm going to go a little inside baseball with the audience here. We had begun this episode a little while earlier, and we had a couple of technical difficulties with the microphone and with some sounds and shit that were happening in the background, where we decided, you know what, fuck it, we're not that far into this, let's run it back. So this is us running it back. And I told Ron, I said, fuck it, I'm glad, I'll try to bring my energy up this time for this. And Ron, what did you tell me to do?
I can't remember.
You're going to deny this now, aren't you?
I don't remember saying anything. Like, are you going to make something up right now?
Ron here, look, you decide, public. Are you going to believe me or are you going to believe Ronnie T-shirts? I think we all know that I'm the more credible voice on this show. Ron told me to pinch my nipples. He said, well, pinch your nipples. And
it worked, didn't it?
It worked. Yeah. Something got released. I don't know what the science is, but I'm going to tell you, I recommend it. If you're just a little down right now, if you need just a little pick me up, give your nipples a pinch. It might bring you right out of it. It's kind of like when Paul Newman used to throw the cold water on his face in The Sting. Sometimes you just need something to rewire the bodily chemistry. After that nipple pinch, and I feel like I'm throwing fastballs, Ronnie.
Yeah, I was going to say your energy level is it's not even – you're so far above what we – when we started. It's crazy.
It really did me some good.
So we somehow have named the podcast, haven't we?
I hope so. You know, maybe that's going to be my thing. You know, Wade Boggs used to eat chicken before every game. Maybe it's just going to be like my thing. I just do a quick nip pinch now before we –
You're gonna be doing an interview on a TV show. I think you told me next week, and just like right before you go on, just reach up, just give a little tweet.
Yeah, I'm gonna be on WGN Morning News next Monday, and yeah, I mean, maybe would that be a bad move if I just kind of just like went under my shirt and just gave myself a little pinch there, just so that the WGN folks could be confident that I was gonna bring my A game.
And they look at you like what the actual hell? And you just go, do you know Ronnie T-shirts? And they'll be like, no, we don't. Well, it's like, well, he told me to do it one time and it works.
All right. So was I pinching myself when I walked into this premiere party? I was not literally pinching myself as I did today. But yeah, I mean, you look around and the thing that has struck me during this entire process is, on the one hand, this show doesn't exist without Super 70 Sports, as bizarre as that sounds, because it was the inspiration for this project occurring. On the other hand, I absolutely feel like Jed Clampett rolling into Beverly Hills in that hunk of shit that they called a car, as I think Andrew Dice Clay once said. I absolutely am aware that I'm the kid from Horse Cave, and I have walked into a world that definitely is not a world that I ever thought that I would find myself populated in. So it's weird, man. On the one hand, it's awesome and exciting, and I've made so many great friends already and have met so many talented people that I got to work with on season one, and certainly I'm hoping that I'll get to keep working with them. Again, Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock Eastern time on Vice, the Super Maximum Retro Show. That would help with the whole getting to make more of them thing if you guys tune in. But yeah, man, it's been an incredible experience to say the least. And I definitely had a few of those surreal moments at the party for sure.
So like, what was it? Was it just kind of mingling? Like, did you like, was there food? Was there drinks? Like, did you actually all sit down and watch it together? Like, I don't like how, like what happened?
Yeah, we didn't watch it. It was very much a nightclub bar type atmosphere. There was a disco ball and lots of good 70s and 80s music and people.
Did you dance?
I did not dance, but mingled, a lot of mingling and conversation and meeting some people for the first time. I met Brian Jones, who is the guy who did the music for the show. And I had never met him before. And he and I struck up a conversation and ended up exchanging phone numbers and stuff. And so made a friend out of it, and then got to see a lot of folks that I had met on the set, production assistants and various executives and people that were a part of the show. Napoleon Emil was there, who is a great comic that is on a couple of the episodes. He's on a couple of episodes, and I believe I'm on both of the episodes that he was on, in fact. And those are both streaming on Amazon Prime, and I believe that if you're a Vice, I don't know if you're a person who has Vice on your cable system or on your streaming, you can probably find those episodes. But it was a good time, man. People were consuming beverages and generally celebrating. So it was a lot of fun and definitely a memory that I'll treasure, I'm sure.
What about groupies? Do you have any groupies yet?
I'm waiting for the groupies. When do you hit the groupie phase of your career when you're a 51-year-old Twitter comedian? At what point do you feel that the levee's going to break and I'm going to be getting chased around like the Beatles in A Hard Day's Night at some point? What do I have to look forward here?
I mean, Ronnie? I think you would increase your chance of groupies if you didn't look homeless.
Now, listen, you always tell me that I look homeless, and I always counter that I look like a singer-songwriter with a mediocre album in like 1975.
I think I saw somebody tweet or reply to one of your tweets that you looked like a roadie from the Allman Brothers Band.
I'll accept that. I look like some guy who would have like come out and opened for the Eagles with an acoustic set in the 1970s, and then everybody would have been like, "Who is that guy? I don't know, but he sucked."
I mean, I guess, you know what? Now that I'm thinking this through, like, you actually should have the look that you have because you do look like you're from the 70s. Because, like, if you ran a Twitter account about clowns and you didn't look like a clown, there'd be no credibility, right?
That's like the most backhanded compliment that I've ever received. But you're always telling me, like, hey, get a haircut, clean up a little bit, whatever. You're kind of like a 50s dad. You're sort of like, get a fucking haircut. And I just, look, for 48 years, I had short hair. I mean, I did have, look, I dabbled in mulletry in the in the early 90s, but I didn't know that it was a mullet at the time. And I was from Kentucky, so we're just fucking lucky that I wasn't wearing a coonskin cap and overalls and shit. Okay. So
did you look like your mom cut your hair with a butter knife?
I looked like that when I was in grade school, I'll tell you that. But I had short hair and I did have whiskers. I always had what they call a circle beard, I guess, Ron, which is just the mustache and goatee combination. And that was the look that I had for probably about 25 years. And then COVID happened and I wasn't going to go out and get a haircut. So basically I grew my hair out and went through all the awkward phases of it looking really weird, which is what is inevitable. If you grow your hair from short to long, there's going to be about 2 months where you just objectively look like shit, because your hair's coming out over your ears. And, you know, so I would have never gone through that phase if it wasn't for COVID. I wouldn't have like gone out in public going through that. So
how do the people that are the closest to you, like your daughters and your mom, like, what do they think about your new look?
I think that they're all used to it. And I think they all like it, actually. Yeah. Yeah, I think they're used to it now, and I think that they're comfortable with it, and I'm used to it now to the point where when I see myself the way that I looked a few years ago, I don't look right to myself, you know? Yeah. And so the reason that I'm keeping it is that I like it. Now, you know, everybody else's opinion is going to vary on that, but
don't matter. None of them matter.
None of them matter, right? I mean, you know, again, like, I don't know. Maybe that's where the groupies went, you know, because I look like Grizzly Adams. But
so have you done any experimentation like with ponytails or man bun or anything? Pigtails? Like
I mean, my hair is long enough that I could get the Willie Nelson braids going.
Oh my God.
If I wanted to.
Dude.
That'd be a good Halloween for me. I get like the red bandana and have one of my daughters braid me myself into two ponies. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I could sing on the road again.
But you'd have to smoke weed, and I know you're against that.
If not for the fact that I would have to consume cannabis, that would have been a good idea. I will say this. I took an edible before we began to tape the first episode that ended up not being an episode. So I got to feel like at some point in the next 2 to 20 minutes, I'm going to start feeling the effects of this. So if I get loopy, you know why.
Well, I would say that if you start to feel that way, just give your just another little tweak to the nipple, see what happens.
Hey, listen, that first nipple pinch did me so much good. Can you go to the well too often?
I don't think you can.
I don't know. I mean, it's got to be a pinch though, right? Like I gave them a pinch. I didn't give them like that. I didn't give them like the swirly, like the Austin Powers.
Well, no, it wasn't. I wasn't suggesting that you get passionate with yourself. Like it was truly to shock your system.
You told me to pinch my nipples, and I actually asked you. I said, "Does this mean we're gay now? Am I gay now?"
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm just asking for a clarification because a grown man told me to pinch my nipples, and I was like your sub. I just did it, like with no questions asked. I'm just a slut, apparently.
Well, you know, I'm Captain Segway, so we just basically, we turned this into like how to live better lives. And it seems like we've been doing that a lot lately. I inspired some people, reached out to me after the prostate exam episode, and they reached out to me and said, you know,
hopefully not with a finger.
No, they didn't. But they reached out and they said, you know, I'm glad I listened to the podcast because it reminded me that I really should go get an exam. So, you know, we are here to help people, and we're serving more of a purpose than just entertaining people. We're trying to make people's lives better. And you did something that was a bit out of character yesterday. You do it every once in a while, but you tweeted something. And it was definitely something to had to be intentional to just like help people. And you said, "This is for anyone out there who needs to hear it today. Don't give up. Believe in yourself. Keep pushing. Take things one day at a time. You can do it." Now, when I read it, I actually did the Waterboy voice. You can do it. This kind of reminded me of something that I wanted to talk about last week, but we ended up not doing the podcast, is the SEC basketball tournament was in Nashville. The men's basketball tournament was in Nashville. And one of my best friends, Matt, graduated from Texas A&M, and he got some tickets, and he asked me if I wanted to go. So I said, sure, let's go. So we went and watched Texas A&M against Arkansas. And while we were there, he got a text from one of his buddies that said that he had 5 tickets on the floor for the next game, which was Kentucky Vanderbilt. And Matt said, "You just want to stay?" And I said, "Yeah, I've never sat on the floor before for something of this magnitude. It'll be kind of cool." But we had 5 tickets and just 2 of us. So at first we joked, "Oh, we need to go find some hot girls and see if they want to come sit with us." But why would any hot girls want to sit with me? They'd want to sit with Matt because Matt's beautiful, but not with me. So we got the idea.
Hey, you're beautiful on the inside. You're beautiful. You're beautiful just the way you are. I heard Christina Aguilera's song, and she was talking to people like yourself.
Am I a genie in a bottle?
You are beautiful no matter what they say. Words can't bring Ronnie t-shirts down. Don't you bring Ronnie down today. I think the edibles kicked in.
Okay, cool. But you did accomplish something that needs to get accomplished in every podcast because people are starting to expect it, is you singing something. So there you go.
That's right. That's why I did it.
Anyway, we got the idea that we should go up to the upper deck, the kind of nosebleed, if you will, And we found a dad and his 10-year-old son. And we said, hey, we've got tickets on the floor. Would you guys like to come down and sit in them? And they did. And I got to tell you, I'm not patting on myself on the back because, hey, you did a great thing, Ron. No, it was awesome. It was so awesome to see how happy that kid was, man. And it just made me think about my daughter and what would happen if somebody had done that when Tyler was 10. And I guess the moral of the story is, if you ever have an opportunity to do something nice for somebody, do it, because they will feel like they'll be so happy and it'll make their day. But man, it made our day too. Like, it was awesome, Ricky.
Well, good for you. You know, the world needs a little bit more kindness. The world actually needs a lot more kindness. If we're going to be honest, our culture has got some issues and people are at each other's throats a lot and life is fucking stressful. And I have a lot of the same problems as I go through my days. You listened to a bitch session from me earlier before we started recording this podcast, in fact. But I just feel like, yeah, it's out of character when I do that. But I've worked real hard to get to a point where I've got an audience that's approaching 750,000 followers. And I figure, hey, I care about my followers. They are my friends. I'm sort of like a DJ in a sense, I think, right? Like, if you follow Super 70s, you're getting a lot of tweets every day. I am kind of a part of your life, like a character from a TV show or something like that almost. And so I feel like there's a responsibility that if you have a platform the size of the one that I have, to just once in a while, just take a minute and try to put some kind of positive mojo into the world. And so it takes 30 seconds of my time to send a tweet like that. And people are going to tease me about it a little bit. I'll get the comments where people will be like, hey, are you okay? And I'll get the Rob Schneider, you can do it, gifts and all of that. But I like to do that about two or three times a year, because you just never know with an audience that big who's out there having a bad day that just needs a little something. You know, sometimes when you're struggling, you just need a little something that you can latch onto. Just something small can actually make a big difference in how your day's going. It can change the trajectory of your day. I've had it happen to me with things that other people have done. So that's all that was. You know, once in a while, just kind of check in and let my friends know that I give a shit about them.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. And mine is just, man, when you can do something nice for somebody, do it. Cause it's super cool, man. It just, again, I don't know if it's cause I saw Tyler when I did it, you know, I saw the joy. It was awesome. So since we were talking about basketball, that's happened at a basketball game, it's time to talk about March Madness. We're not going to analyze all the games. Nobody wants to hear us. Nobody has any interest in hearing us do that.
Name one college basketball player, and it's just because he gave somebody a gun.
Brandon Miller.
Darius. Is it Brandon? Is that his name?
Brandon Miller gave the gun. Darius Miles.
Okay, see, there you go. I would have fucked it up. I thought his name was Darius Miller. So I might not be able to name a single college. Does Drew Timmy still play for
Gonzaga? He did, and he actually said fuck live on the air last night.
Did he? Well, good for him. Good for him. But yeah, so I could have named him, man. I would be struggling. I don't think I could get to five. I'm pretty sure that that's it.
Yeah, it's like me in baseball, right? It's like me in baseball.
Yeah, that's definitely the point that I've arrived at with college basketball.
So you remember recent episode, after the Super Bowl, we named the podcast Super Bowl Shuttlecock, and we basically lobbed back and forth to each other. Memorable moments from the Super Bowl. I want to do that with March Madness. And I started last time, And so I'm going to let you start this time. So it doesn't have to be the greatest. It just has to be what comes to your mind when you think about things that happen in March Madness. Go.
Well, I did love March Madness for a long time. And I read today that the term March Madness was first used in 1939. By the way, a guy was talking about high school basketball. But anyway, yeah. I used to be a huge college basketball fan. The first thing that came to my mind, which is the honest answer to give, sometimes when you ask people to give their first thought, they don't really do that, right? They tell you the third thing they thought of because it's cooler. But the first play that I thought of was Georgetown, North Carolina, 1982. I believe it was at the Superdome. Fred Brown from Georgetown throws the ball inexplicably to James Worthy from North Carolina rather than one of his teammates, and that sealed the game for North Carolina.
Okay. So, and then the subsequent hug after the game from John Thompson.
The hug of consolation that made a lot of people like John Thompson. Yeah.
So, because I don't know if it's because it's number two on my list, because that was my number one also. It's from the same game as Jordan hitting the winning shot.
That was a moment of history, two moments of history there that weren't separated by very much time. Mm-hmm. Looking back at it now, yeah, that was Jordan really announcing himself to the world stage. We had no idea what we were in store for when we saw him drain that jumper, but I was watching live like you when it happened.
He was a freshman too. So
he was a fucking freshman and came back and played a couple more years. It was a different world.
It really was. It really was. All right. What's your next one?
My next one, I would say, man, it's, you know, I hate to be negative, but it's the fuck-ups for whatever reason that stick with me. Chris Webber calling a timeout that he did not have at his disposal, and I think it was 93, also against North Carolina. You know, Dean Smith only won two championships in his amazing career, and they both were helped by big time fuck ups by a kid on the other team in the waning seconds.
I mean, you know that was just so devastating to me, right? You know, being the big Michigan fan that I am.
I believe you still haven't gotten over it.
Well, it was probably one of my favorite things I ever saw, knowing that Michigan fans all over the world were distraught. So it did give me joy.
But come on, man, you had to like the Fab Five a little. I mean, that to me is the test of your Michigan hatred, because the Fab Five was so cool and so universally liked, and it's not football. I know that you despise Michigan. I'm well aware, but the Fab Five, be honest, did you think that they were at least a little bit cool?
If you swear that you'll never tell anybody what I say, because I will deny it.
This is like we're in a confessional, Ron. It's just you and me and the weird screen between us.
Okay. Fab Five were pretty damn cool. And I hated that it was Michigan. I wish it would have been somebody else. But yeah, they were pretty cool.
Did they play all 4 years together?
No. They went early, man.
But 93, wasn't it 93 that Webber did that? And weren't they freshmen in 90?
Yeah, I think, didn't they play 2 years? Didn't they play 2 years or 3 years? They didn't play four.
But I thought it was 93. Maybe it was his junior year.
Maybe. Can you name all the Fab Five? I don't even know if I can anymore.
Ray Jackson, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, Jimmy King, and Chris Webber.
Dude, very, very, very impressed.
Yeah, I'm kind of pumped about that, actually.
Okay, so it's my turn on March Madness. It was lobbed to me.
The shuttlecock is on your side of the net, sir.
Yes. So I I mean, this is one of the most iconic Final Fours or Final Games of all time. It's some say it's what put the Final Four on the map, and that is 79, Indiana State, Michigan State, obviously Bird and Magic. But I just loved Greg Kelser, whose nickname was Special K. And I just watching that guy get passes from Magic and just dunking, like I loved it. I just loved it. So I remember Greg Kelser on top of all the obvious stuff from that game.
That's one of Magic Johnson's greatest legacies, is that you remember Greg Kelser.
Yeah.
Because that was Irvin Johnson doing Irvin Johnson things in college with the best teammate that he had, who happened to be Greg Kelser, who probably wouldn't be remembered a lot outside of the state of Michigan if he hadn't played with Magic Johnson. But more power to him. They beat Larry Bird that day. And I remember watching that game as well and being disappointed, because I was rooting for the Hick from French Lick on that day. But that was the first chapter in, I guess, arguably, not even arguably, one of the handful of the greatest rivalries in the history of sports. Mm-hmm. Between those two guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to mention one that, frankly, it's hard to believe that we haven't mentioned already, and that would be Christian Laettner in 1992 burying a shot. There was 1.8 seconds left. It was the East Regional Final in Philadelphia at the Spectrum, I believe, Ron. And Kentucky was rebuilding their program from the scandals and stuff that had befallen the program under Eddie Sutton, with that straight arrow Rick Pitino in charge. That's what we thought at the time. Can you imagine asking Rick Pitino to come in and clean up your program?
Well, it's as we're recording this right now, it looks like he's going to be the next coach at St. John.
God bless him. That 2013 apparition of a national championship, I still don't know how to feel about it. My cat's going fucking bonkers here, by the way, running around and meowing and shit.
That's all right. It's good. It's good.
I've lost control here, as if I ever had it. But Laettner hitting that shot, man, there's been two times in my adult life that I can remember that the result of a sporting event made me cry. And you know me, I'm an emotional motherfucker. It's possible there's one in there somewhere that I could be forgetting. But the two times that has happened for me are the 2009 Open Championship, when Tom Watson needed to par the last hole at Turnberry to win the Open at age 59. And, of course, bogeyed it and then lost in a playoff to Stuart Sink. That made me cry. And the other one was Christian Laettner's shot. So I've gotten over it because I'm not a Kentucky fan in my adulthood. But if you're a kid raised in Kentucky, unless you live in Louisville or you have parents who went to Louisville, you're going to be a Kentucky fan. And so that entire state's heart was pulled out by Christian Laettner. And if to this day, if you go to Kentucky and bring up Christian Laettner, somebody's going to drop an F-bomb on you real fast.
That's funny. Keith Smart, Indiana, hit that baseline jumper, and my brain is stopping again. Who was it against?
Syracuse.
Syracuse.
Yeah. Yeah, it was against Syracuse. Those are the ones. So, like, is the loser the person who can't fucking think of one? I've got one more at least. Gordon Hayward's half court shot that damn near went in against Duke.
I mean, he missed it by what, an inch?
It was so close to going in. If he had made that, that would have been like one of the most satisfying moments in sports history, without a doubt, especially because it was against Duke, who many of us fucking hate. The hatred of Duke can bring together Republicans and Democrats. It can bring together people of different nationalities, people of different faiths. Duke unites like few other things. So if Gordon Hayward had made that shot, it would have been beyond spectacular. That would have been the quintessential March Madness moment if it had gone in, no doubt.
I mean, how can we can't do this segment without talking about Jimmy V running around, can't find anybody to hug after NC State beat Houston.
Dude, Derek Wittenberg with the most productive air ball history.
It was a pass to Lorenzo Charles. Everybody.
He should have gotten credited for an assist.
Absolutely.
On that. But yeah, love that team. And there's, as I've said, I think on the podcast before, there's a really good documentary. I can't remember if it's a 30 for 30. I think it was an ESPN thing, but look for it. If you find the one from within the last 4 or 5 years that looks like it was done well, it's the right one. Such a good documentary about that run. And I had Terry Gannon on this, well, on the old podcast that I did solo, and getting to pick his brain about that 83 Wolfpack team was a lot of fun, because that, to me, until somebody comes along and tops it, that to me is the ultimate Cinderella NCAA run. I think it's the gold standard. If you're going to go down in history as a bigger underdog who did more remarkable things, you're going to have to take down the Wolfpack. And it's going to be hard to do, because that was truly, you couldn't write a movie that would have been any better than that. And I'm surprised, to be honest with you, that they never made a movie about it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about that, though, is, like, you know, Villanova beating Georgetown in 85 was a pretty big upset, but Villanova basically had won that game, right? Like, it never was in doubt at the end, but, I mean, it was a miracle, an absolute unadulterated miracle that NC State won when Wittenberg came up short on that three-point attempt.
They beat a team that had Akeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler on it.
Michael Young. Don't ever forget Michael Young.
Larry Meshaw.
Oh, Larry Meshaw, right? And what was the white kid? Reed.
Oh, my God.
Reed Getty.
Haven't thought of him in years. Was he like number 44?
Yep, something like that.
That's crazy. Yeah, dude. No, the Villanova thing was crazy, because they went like 22 of 27 from the field or something stupid.
They were like Bill Walton.
They barely missed a shot. They played like, quote unquote, a perfect game, basically, to beat Georgetown. But yeah, that's one of the things, man. Georgetown there had a run where they made it to the championship game 3 times in 4 years, but they only came away with the brass ring once. You know, they were a team, but it's amazing equally that Houston never won one. Yep. With the talent they had. But hey, look at the rosters of these teams that we're talking about, and then look at this year's NCAA tournament and tell me if the two experiences have anything in common with one another.
Not even close.
I mean, nowadays it's like, okay, Fairleigh Dickinson beat the number one seed. Okay, well, what the fuck's special about Purdue? I mean, like, okay, I mean, it's a great thing. I'm not trying to say that it's not a great achievement. I mean, it's awesome when a 16 beats a one, but at the same time, I suspect these things are going to become more common as we go forward.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what it is? It's not personal, because they're just uniforms. Now they're just uniforms.
They're just uniforms. That's absolutely right. That's why I have a hard time seeing how people get into it. College football, I can understand, because those guys are generally staying the entire ride, right?
Minimum of three. I mean, yeah. Stay a minimum of three.
So yeah, you can get into it. You've got seniors that you've watched for several years. College basketball to me is just, I don't know, dude. More power to everybody that enjoys it, but I just see it as a mercenary thing where people come in, you pay them to pretend that they're going to your school for a year or two, and then it's over. And it's hard for me to get excited about that.
All right, it's your turn. The birdie is on your side of the court.
Well, goddamn, I've only got one more in me. Let me decide what that would be.
Okay.
I guess geez, it's hard for me. I'll go with UNLV kicking the shit out of Duke. And I guess it was, what was it, 90?
90.
Yeah, when they just beat Duke by like 30, just absolutely boat raced them. Is that what it's called? I almost said that they motorboated them.
They motorboated them.
Which is a whole different – that's a whole different thing. But, yeah, just UNLV kicking the shit out of Duke is – one of my most satisfying March Madness moments, if not number one.
All right, let's do it real quick, and then I'll give you my last one. Larry Johnson, Stacey Augmon, Anderson Hunt. Who else? Who are the other two?
Oh, shit, dude. Okay, hang on. Stacey Augmon, Greg Anthony.
Greg Anthony.
Anderson Hunt, Larry Johnson, and oh, motherfucker.
If somebody said it right now, I'd be like, yep, that's it. I just can't get it out. I cannot pop it out of my brain.
Motherfucker.
It was a big dude, right? It was like the power forward.
Yes.
No, George. George. Was his name George?
First name or last name?
First.
I don't fucking remember. I'm looking it up, though, because okay, I can't. Cool.
Look it up.
People that are listening to this are getting fucking mad ass.
Yeah. All right. You look it up while I give my last one. All right.
All right.
This one's got some, has a personal connection. So like everybody else, always do pools, NCAA bracket pools. Well, there were two that I was doing for a really long time. And one of them was a big money one. It only cost like $30 to be in it, but there was like a ton of people. I feel like there was like 1,000 people were in it. And so probably when she was, 7 or 8, Tyler started doing it too. And she would fill out her brackets. Well, if you remember what happened in 2008, it was Kansas against Memphis, and Mario Chalmers hit the shot to win the game for Kansas, right?
I do remember that is accurate, sir.
Because that shot went down, Tyler, who was 11 at the time, won $700.
Wow.
And I remember what she went out, because Tyler was a weird kid. She didn't spend money. Like, she'd get money for birthdays and for holidays and whatever, and she would never want to spend it. She just always was just stick it in the bank. And this time she went out and she bought a whole Wii system with just a ton of games. And I just remember her just going absolutely berserk when she found out, because she didn't know until the next day that she had won so much money.
That's an amazing amount of money for a child to win. $700 when you're 11 is like, you got to feel like you've just won the Powerball.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you figure out who that fifth player was for UNLV?
David Butler.
Oh, okay.
And that didn't even really ring that much of a bell with me, if I'm going to be fucking honest with you. I feel bad.
Totally agree. Sorry, David, if you're listening.
Yeah. And he was like, he averaged 15.8 points and 7.4 rebounds. He was arguably as valuable as anybody on the team other than Larry Johnson.
Well, let's be honest. If you're on that team, you averaged a lot of points because they scored a lot of points.
Yeah, no, it was a good team for sure. One of the best. What do you think would happen if you dropped some of the great teams from, let's say, the 80s and 90s into this tournament? Do you think they would clean up, or do you buy the argument that, like, even though these kids may be anonymous, they're such fucking athletes and stuff now that the game has leveled up? Where do you fall on that?
The only thing I think would make it so that those teams from those eras would win was there is, I know you hate the Pistons, but there is something to be said about team basketball and how it can overcome a lack of athleticism sometimes. And so I just don't see how some of these teams that had been together for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, I think they would just school some of these teams right now, because it's not like Patrick Ewing and Michael Graham and Sleepy Floyd were terrible athletes, right? And you know, the guys that were mentioning on Houston and NC State, it's not like Thurl Bailey wouldn't be able to hold his own, right? So I think the fact that they had so much time playing together and they knew how to play team basketball, I think they'd do okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the best teams were better. The talent pool is deeper nowadays, I'm sure. But I think the best teams, for the reasons that you state, not only because they played together for a long time, but, you know, some of these guys, by the time Michael Jordan was a junior in college, I mean, that motherfucker could have been averaging 25 in the NBA, no problem.
Well, but just think about that team. Think about that UNC team, right? James Worthy, Sam Perkins, Michael Jordan. Who was the point guard?
Jimmy Black.
Jimmy Black. Good job. You told me that team couldn't beat
Matt Texas. Doherty was on that team.
Yeah, come on. They would win easily right now.
I mean, the only question would be the 3-point shot, but the 3-point shot in college is so fucking short.
Yeah.
You know, my grandma can shoot those, and she's been dead for 20 years.
Oh, your grandma had a sweet stroke, man. Man, she just made it rain all the time. Oh.
She did. She was her name was Lillian. They called her Lillian Buckets.
All right. So what do you want to talk about now, Ricky?
Well, I don't really have a game plan. You know, people have to understand that when we say that we don't talk about what we're going to talk about before the podcast, we really fucking mean that shit. So all I did to prepare for this episode was take an edible and pinch my nipples. And I feel like it's going pretty good so far. So I'm going to continue to let you be the point guard and hope that you can put the ball in my hands so I can score.
All right, we'll do it. So I have a list. You just don't have a list. I have the list. Speaking of basketball, you did a tweet yesterday and I responded to you and you didn't acknowledge it, but I just wanted to point this out to you. If you said, if when you saw a rim, a basketball hoop that was like, it, you know, pulled down to like whatever, 7-8 feet, like you wanted to just go Dominique Wilkins on it. Do you remember that tweet?
I do remember that tweet. That's a tweet that I made. I didn't see your comment, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I responded, you'd snap your Achilles. And I got a ton of people who liked it. Dude, you'd snap your Achilles if you tried to dunk on a 8-foot rim right now.
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
Bullshit.
You barely even got a jump to dunk on an 8-foot rim. I mean, I'm 6 feet tall and I got arms.
I'm going to text Bailey, your daughter, and I'm going to have her go find an 8-foot rim. I'm going to have her get her camera out and you're going to dunk and we're going to see what happens.
I'll Max McClung that motherfucker.
It's Mac, not Max.
See, because who gives a fuck? Because he's not really an NBA player. He's a circus performer.
That is true. He's a sideshow.
He's a sideshow. I hope everybody enjoyed the dunk contest. That's what the world's come to. I used to like to watch Julius Erving and Michael Jordan dunk. Now we're up with the fucking trampoline guys at halftime. It's a fucking joke. Dude, I still don't even understand what we're doing. We're just it's a pickup game every year now. And I'm going to say this real quickly because I don't want to go off onto a big NBA tangent. But I tried to watch some of the first quarter of the NBA All-Star game because I put some money on it in an attempt to have interest in it. And they're not even pretending to play defense. It's the biggest fucking waste of time that I've ever seen in my life. I would rather fucking go clean a septic tank than watch the NBA All-Star game.
We might just got our podcast title. We'll see. I did something that I wanted to bring up. The last episode we were talking about Wild World of Sports.
Yeah.
And we were talking about our favorite stuff on Wild World of Sports, and somebody sent a tweet to me or responded to me or something. Dude, you know what we never said?
What?
This just makes us both stupid. Evel Knievel.
Oh, shit. Yeah. What's
wrong with us?
Yeah. Well, see, I don't actually remember him jumping because I'm youthful.
<You're> just-
So I've got a small excuse there because I don't remember Ali either. It's like, again, I'm the 70s guy. I took the gauntlet because nobody else was going to hold it up, apparently, for the greatest goddamn decade that there ever was in the history of human civilization. But I am about 5 years younger than would be ideal to have fully gotten to experience the 70s. So I missed out on the Ali fights and I missed out on the Knievel jumps. So, I was a huge Evel Knievel fan as a kid because I obviously saw the clips and knew everything about it, but I don't know if I ever saw one of his jumps live or not.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw them, and so the fact that I didn't bring it up makes me stupid. So speaking of the Super 70s, you got any interest in kind of brand extension? Because Tyler has expressed interest to me that she would like to do a Super 2000s Twitter account.
Well, hey now. Look at this.
She was born in 96.
Yeah.
So the 2000s were, she was 4 to 14.
Okay, that's just about perfect.
Yeah, and so she wants to do, and so she could do the 2000s and then the teens of the 2000s.
Well, she should do it because Lord knows I don't fucking understand it well enough to talk about it.
Yeah. So
it all blends together. When you have a job and children, it all blends together in a different way, man. I'm just telling you. It is interesting to me. I just thought when I was growing up that every decade stood out in some way on its own. I mean, the 40s is your World War II decade. You know, the 30s is Al Capone. 20s is fucking cars that go ooga ooga and the stock market crashing. The 30s is the Great Depression and Al Capone and shit. The 40s is World War II and the 50s is Elvis and rock and roll. The 60s is the Beatles and Woodstock and hippies. The 70s, obviously, I have commented on. The 80s is yuppies and big hair and shit. The 90s is Kurt Cobain and rap taking off and grunge music. Every decade used to really pop. And I'm not sure, man, from like the time that we got to the late 90s, I'm not sure that there's like a hell of a lot that I can point to other than how good my phone in my pocket is or shit like that.
Yeah. So you just actually, you brought up a name, which is going to bring us to the final four.
Oh yeah.
Before we do the final four, did you see the biopic on Elvis?
I have not seen it yet. I've heard that it was good. I've heard that it was just okay. I know that Tom Hanks is in it. You got a recommendation for us here?
First of all, it was not Tom Hanks. It was Fat Tom Hanks. So I'll be honest with you, not a big fan of Elvis. Don't hate Elvis, just not a fan. Don't know a tremendous amount about his life. I know enough. Lori and I watched it, 2-3 weeks ago. Absolutely fascinating. Like, absolutely fascinating. The kid that played young Elvis, it was freakish how much he looked acted sounded like young Elvis. It was just, it was a very enjoyable, whatever it was, 2.5 hours. So highly recommend it.
I've stood in Elvis's bedroom, Ronnie.
Oh, yeah, I've never been to Graceland.
Yeah, I did it about 22, 23 years ago. And it's wild to go through the guy's house and just think to yourself, holy shit, I'm in Elvis's fucking house, you know?
To be top five most famous people of all time, right?
Yeah, man, he's on the very short list of most famous people. He's buried in his fucking backyard.
Like a dog? Like when you bury a dog?
Yeah, there's just a couple of popsicle sticks up.
So that brings us to the final four. If we've done this before, I don't think we have. I apologize to you and everybody else, but I don't think we've actually done. Ricky, what are your four favorite movies, all genres? Because I know we've done sports movies, but what are your four favorite movies?
Oh, boy. Well, my first two will be easy because they're very different movies, but they've been at the top of my list for so long that I can give you the first two real easy. Dazed and Confused.
Okay.
It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I've seen that movie so many fucking times. Never gets old. Just the fact that I'm talking about it here as this edible kicks in, I might just put it on tonight and watch it here at Super 70 Sports Headquarters. Love that movie. So many great characters. Wooderson, obviously, Matthew McConaughey. I don't care how many Oscars that guy wins. Wooderson is such a great character. So give me Dazed and Confused every day of the week, twice on Sundays. My other favorite movie that I would put equal to it is Pulp Fiction. Absolutely fucking love Pulp Fiction. I'm a pretty big Quentin Tarantino fan overall, but Pulp Fiction to me is his masterpiece. Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta. That movie is so fucking good. Oh my God, I love Pulp Fiction. So those would be the first two. Now, while I pause and reflect a little bit on what three and four might be, I'm going to turn your question on you. And I know that you're not the biggest movie guy in the world. It's weird because it's like on the one hand, you watch more TV than I do probably. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, your movie and television show cultural awareness barometer is probably worse than mine. I don't know how that happens, but tell me, going back in time, because I've got a feeling you're going to pick some older stuff just like I did. What might be on your final four, Ronnie?
Well, you know, my number one is, I think that it's anybody over the age of 35, I think every single person has this in their top four, and I'll be shocked if you don't, is Shawshank. Like, it's my number one. Like, Shawshank is my number one movie. I think it is it's just the best movie. I absolutely love Shawshank.
It's a great movie. I don't think I would put it in my top four just because I probably have to squeeze a couple of sports movies in there. But absolutely, so, it's a deserving person in anybody's final four. It's a great movie.
Another one, which I don't know, like, how many people would actually put it in their final, you know, their top four. But I cannot speak. I love American History X.
Bro,
I think it is one of the greatest movies of all time, and it has a scene in there which everybody knows that it's the hardest scene in the world to watch.
Dude, that scene is the reason.
Say it because everybody knows.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say it. I don't need to say it. Although there's probably some people that are wondering. Well, we should say it for the people that don't know. Or is this if you know, you know. Google American History X if you want to know. But absolutely. But that scene is the reason that while I agree it's a very, very good movie, mm-hmm. I only have seen it once or twice, maybe two or three times, because I you know, that's not a scene that I want to see on any kind of even semi-regular basis in my life, man. Just the thought of it right now is making me have pain.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
So I'm going to hit you with a comedy for another one. Superbad.
Dude. All right. That's interesting. See, I'm a big Jonah Hill fan, and I'm a fan of a lot of Judd Apatow's stuff. And that is a Judd Apatow movie, isn't it? I think it is.
I believe it is.
But yeah, man, Superbad's a good movie. I definitely can rock with that.
And then I'm going to go for my fourth one is another comedy. And I'm also going to give myself an honorable mention for not because it's one of the best movies, but because of the personal connection I have to it. But dude, Hangover is unbelievable. From start to finish, it is unbelievable.
No question. It's a great movie. I mean, Zach Galifianakis
is a genius.
Yeah, he's a genius. I would agree with that. He misses sometimes, but he makes very, very bold choices. And when he hits, he hits it farther than just about anybody. So
my honorable mention the first Top Gun. Story time. When I was in college, I had a VCR, which sounds crazy right now, but almost nobody.
Rich motherfucker.
Oh, I was a baller. I had a VCR. I think I got it for a birthday present from my parents. And I had on VHS, I had Top Gun. And I invited many, many, many co-eds at the end of a night out. Hey, you want to come back to my place? Basically, Ricky, I invented Netflix and chill. I'd say, you want to come back to my place and watch Top Gun?
VHS and chill, baby.
And many took me up on it. And I can tell you, I basically only saw the first 20 minutes of that movie many, many, many times. So Top Gun will always have a special place in my heart.
That's because you're a closer, Ronnie. That's because you're a closer. Can I really cheat and just pick as my number three, like the Rocky franchise?
Absolutely.
Because it's hard to hand pick a Rocky. Now, I'm only talking about Rocky through Rocky IV. Because for me, after that, I don't need any of it. I thought that the Rocky Balboa movie was pretty good. I thought that the first Creed was pretty good. I haven't seen the second one or the new one. It's amazing to me that we're already on Creed 3. And nothing wrong with those movies, but for me, the real Rocky saga starts with him being a brain-injured idiot in Philadelphia and ends with him defeating the Soviet Union's will. Basically, he in 11 years or 9 years, I believe, he went from just being a functionally delayed man who was beat about the head too many times to giving an eloquent speech to Gorbachev to basically just cut out the nonsense. So an incredible run for Rocky Balboa. So allowing me that takes me down to the last spot. And goddamn, man, that's a tough one. But as much as I want to pick a sports movie, I've got some baseball movies that are splitting the vote. And I love My Cousin Vinny. That's always been a favorite. I like the original Halloween. That's always been a favorite. But just the way I'm feeling right now, I am going to have to go with, I think somewhat inspired by your choice of Superbad, I'm going to pick The 40-Year-Old Virgin. I love that movie.
I would love to see you get your back waxed. Or the chest. No, he got his chest waxed.
Yeah, he got his chest waxed. But Steve Carell's a lot hairier than me. I mean, I know you might not know it from the beard and the long hair. I got a little bit of chest hair. I'm not one of those guys who's just covered in it. So I wouldn't have gone through what he went through. But that movie to me is Steve Carell's finest work. And it's also got Seth Rogen in it and Paul Rudd. And, it, you know, just a very, very funny movie if you have a certain kind of sense of humor.
I like it. I think that's going to be it, Ricky, unless you have something else you want to talk about.
I'm thinking about it. I mean, not really. The only thing that I would encourage people to do is...
Wait, watch your show on Vice?
Yeah. It on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock Eastern time, and they are rerunning some of these episodes. If you have Vice, you can check in and catch up if you're behind. But again, I'm proud of the show, Super Maximum Retro Show. Give it a shot. If you're a big enough of a fan of the stuff that I do that you're listening to this goddamn podcast, tune in for me one time and see what you think. But no, other than that, I suppose that.
Well, I'd like for people to subscribe, rate, and review.
Yeah, that would be helpful also. Yeah, subscribe, rate, and review if you like us. If you don't like us, let's just pretend that this shit didn't happen and we'll go our separate ways.
All right, as we ended every episode now, it seems like, say goodbye, Ricky.
Goodbye, Ricky. We will see you next week. We promise we're going to be back next week on the Super 70 Sports Show.
Oh my God. It's gotta be Cobb. It's gotta be Cobb.